Greetings and welcome to the 9th installment of our podcast series, The Workforce Lens, brought to you by Tarrant County College in North Texas. I am Shannon Bryant, Executive Vice President for Corporate Solutions and Economic Development, and I will be your host, moderating strategic conversations with employers and economic developers on all things related to preparing and growing the workforce today and the future. Today, help me welcome our guest, Ms. Kimberly Shaw, President and CEO of the Regional Black Contractors Association. The Regional Black Contractors Association maintains very effective working relationships with state, municipal, and corporate leaders. The mission is to advocate for and advance the development and growth of African American-owned businesses. Welcome, Kimberly.
Thank you so much, Shannon. Thank you for having me here today.
We are so glad to have you here today. So, Kimberly, let's get started. And if you could, please tell us a little bit about the history and the mission of the Regional Black Contractors Association.
Absolutely. The Regional Black Contractors Association is actually a spinoff of what was formerly the Black Contractors Association, the BCA, that was founded in the late 90s. And it was founded by a group of construction owners who just felt the need for advocacy in the construction market for minority businesses and Black businesses in particular. And so that group of people were the originators. They formed the board, and from there, it became a membership association over the years. In 2012, the former city manager, Richard Knight, who has recently passed away and is no longer here with us, but left a very lasting legacy in this metroplex and in the city and the country. And Richard Knight passed the torch on to our chairman, John Proctor. And when they made the switch, they had to do a few new management things and renamed the association the Regional Black Contractors Association. And from there, we were birthed. Many of the former members came over and joined the RBCA as well. And then we've been so blessed to have, you know, new businesses and new minority businesses and Black-owned businesses and even, you know, non-minority firms. It's a group. You know, it's a big group. So that's the birth of how the RBCA was formed back in 2014, when John Proctor took it over. So
when it's, when you say regional, what is the region of the Contractors Association?
So originally it was intended to be the North Texas region when we first started it. However, it has grown, and we're in Houston, which is not North Texas. It's Southern Texas. So now, and I think with anything, you start something, and then as you build it, it evolves and it grows, and you just have to kind of go with the flow and go with what's telling you to go, where the need is. And so now when we say region, I like to think of it as us growing into new markets in the whole southern region. So,
and what does your membership look like right now at this moment?
So right now we've got a little over 150 in our membership base and growing. And that's, you know, in Texas, and we also have members in other geographic markets, New York, Tennessee, Atlanta, Chicago, Baltimore. So wherever the work is.
There you go. That's wonderful. Important mission. So, So Kim, you are the president and the CEO. And so if you could tell us a little bit about your journey to leadership and how did you end up in this role?
Very interesting. I actually have a human resources background. I had no idea that I was going to end up in construction whatsoever. But it's quite funny how, you know, God puts your path together and you just go with it. My HR background led me to the North Texas Tollway Authority, where I worked there in human resources for several years. And then I left that because I really wanted to do something different. I felt some type of entrepreneurship in me. I didn't really know what it was, but it was some burning desire to just kind of get out. You know?
Had to figure it out.
Yes, I did. And so I worked for a lady who sold traffic control. She sold barricades and cones and the things that go up on the highway when you're doing a road. So everything that slows us down, right?
Those pretty orange barrels?
Yes, those. Yeah. So she was selling, or she started this company and was looking for a business development person. And I wasn't doing anything at the time. And so I agreed to this position. And it was really interesting because that was the first time I was in this very unfamiliar industry, this market I knew nothing about. Coming from human resources in a corporate environment to basically, you know, you wake up and you have to create your own business. And that was a big shocker for me. But I did it because that's just kind of what we do, right? We just get it done. Right. At that point, I started driving around to construction trailers and anywhere that I saw a job site because that's who I knew would be the customer. And I began to do that, and then that work led me into the networking circles of the construction industry, getting out there, meeting more general contractors, meeting more companies. And that's how I ended up meeting John Proctor, the chairman of the Regional Black Contractors Association. And when I met him, Mr. Proctor had actually just taken over as chairman, maybe 6 months, 7 months prior to me meeting him. And when he took over the association, it was just him. And there were a few board members from the previous leadership, and there was no staff or anything like that. And so he also had his own company, and so some of his staff would be doing RBCA stuff. And then he met me and said, "Will you be my secretary?"
Okay.
And I said, "Sure." because I didn't want to turn down the opportunity of a stable income at that point, because my business development job I was doing was 100% commission. Single mother, you know, two kids. I needed something that was stable.
Right. And so, and a little more sustainable.
Exactly. So I said yes to that, but I still did the business development on the side because I could use that network of contractors within the RBCA to sell the traffic control to. And she also sold safety PPE. So that was another big selling market. And DFW Airport ended up being one of her clients that I was able to bring in for her. But long story short, so he asked me to be his secretary. And 6 years later, I'm now the CEO. So voila.
That is awesome. You never know what path life is going to take you.
You really don't. No, and it's been such an amazing journey, and I'm so grateful to have come in at the time I came in with John Proctor, because also to know him is to love him. He is, you know, one of a kind. Had I not been able to experience all of these growth moments that were not only growth changing and life changing for the association, but internally, the things that you go through when you're building something from scratch, it's a very beautiful process.
Right. Well, and it's been beautiful working with you, because I know
Thank
when
you.
I came to Texas a few years ago, I think you were just coming into the role about the same time I was coming into this role, mm-hmm. and we've kind of grown together, and I've seen the wonderful work that you've been doing.
Thank you.
And see you everywhere. So
Thank
that's
you
great.
So, much.
So I do know that the RBCA also supports a number of community focused programs, and I want you to speak a little bit to those today. So kind of going through the website, knowing a little bit more about the association, you have different initiatives like the Go Giver fundraiser, the scholarship program, the reentry program, which I really want you to focus on, also senior home repair. Can you speak to those a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the biggest things that the RBCA prides itself on is that community engagement and giving back. We were always and have always been very focused on building companies and building businesses, but even more so on helping what we call the least of these. And those are people who don't necessarily have the same opportunities or the same accessibility or the resources or the voice even sometimes to speak up and really voice their concerns or get what they need. And so we know that the Black community is really impacted by the criminal justice system and people, you know, being incarcerated. We know that there is lower health care accessibility in some of these underserved neighborhoods. We know that some of the students that are going to high school don't always have the resources to go to college. They don't have the financial resources to do that. And so some of these programs that we have now created were just things that we wanted to do to help people in the community, one person at a time. And over time, we were able to get donors and sponsors and people that, you know, committed to helping stop some of these issues. And so the Go Giver fundraiser campaign, that actually came last. So I'll save that for last. But the scholarship and the senior home repair literally just started because people knew John. John would say, you know, if Miss Mabel down the street needs a new hot water heater, you know, in December, we need to go get her one. If Miss Mary needs a new roof because her roof is leaking, we're going to get some contractors to go over there and fix her roof. And it just started like that. And then from there, people began to call. And the city of Dallas picked up and said, oh, they have a lot of, you know, they're helping a lot of people. Now, we still don't get funding from them to do this, but that's kind of where the recognition started coming from. And we said, oh, we need to turn this into an actual program where we're getting dollars to help, you know, rebuild people's houses and do their bathrooms, make sure that they can, you know, they have the ADA accommodations and all of that. So that's how that started.
Really important work.
So we're really, and then the scholarship program, that came about because, again, just wanting to make sure that we gave people an opportunity to go to college. So we worked with DISD and Fort Worth ISD, and we would give out scholarships. And so far we've given out $55,000 in scholarships to date, and we continue to ask our sponsors and donors to give to that cause.
Do those individuals have to go into the construction industry?
It's construction STEM, so any science, technology, engineering, math, and any of the trades. You can go to a 2 or 4 year program that teaches like construction management or any of the trades, or you can just go directly to a trade school. So we accept any of all and all of those.
Yeah. Do any of those scholarships also cover credentials or 1 year certificates?
We just give the money directly to the school of their choice.
Okay.
And whatever that covers for that semester, it covers.
Okay, great. So it's not specifically tied to an academic program. It could be a short-term certificate or credential of some sort as well.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. And the Go Giver fundraiser campaign was just a means to, again, raise funding and raise capital for those programs. We are a nonprofit, so we have to heavily rely on the Go Givers and people that are excited to give to other causes. The reentry program, that one's a big one. So how much time do you have?
Yeah, we're gonna talk more about that. So that's a great transition. So the RBCA is a training partner of both Dallas College and also Tarrant County College, as it ties directly to the workforce development around the Second Chance program. Mm-hmm. This is an effort to provide technical skills training, job placement, and wraparound services to help combat recidivism. Tell us about the successes of this program and why is it so imperative to our community?
This program is really the pinnacle of what we do. There are so many people that are able and ready to work and ready to be a contributing member of society. A lot of people in the underserved neighborhoods come from a very rough background, and they have a lot of obstacles that are in their way from birth. Mm-hmm. And so having programs like the Second Chance program, which helps people who have been formerly incarcerated or people who may have never been through the penal system, but they just need a hand up and they just need somebody to help walk with them through the career journey and through the skills training journey. And so what we've been able to, again, create as a program, which what started off with was John Proctor, just hiring people and always has from back in the 70s. He started his construction company in San Diego, and he would hire people with the background onto the construction sites. And so that's what he did. And when we came, when he came to, as the chairman to the RBCA, it's just something that he did. We would then put the obligation on our members, on those Black contractors, to hire Black workforce. We would see that the unemployment rate for Black men and women was of the highest. We would see that the poverty levels were also the highest. And so how do you combat that, and how do you combat recidivism with a job?
Right.
And how do you also tackle some of those things like self-esteem and self-worth and being a contributor to your household and to your family and gaining the respect back of your family after you've committed a crime, you know, and have done your time. And by providing people with a job, that helps, you know, eliminate those things. Maybe not eliminate, but it definitely helps. It helps the sting. So
yeah, exactly. Takes away some of the obstacles.
Exactly, exactly. And so the Second Chance program, what we've done, we've added the colleges as training partners to just give some credibility to the program. When people are coming into the Second Chance program, they know that they're going to get respected. Number one, they're going to get that respect from the door. And they also know that they're going to have people behind the scenes fighting on their behalf and advocating on their behalf and working with partners like Tarrant County and Dallas College to provide that level of education that they would get if they were, you know, paying for it.
Right.
But this is being offered to them at no cost, you know, thanks to those programs.
And Kim, when does the education for this program start? Is it before they're, if they're incarcerated, before they're released, or is it after release? And kind of talk to us a little bit about what does that, what's that path look like?
Sure. For our program, it happens after they're released, but we work closely with programs that are working with them while they're inside of the prison as well. And that goes into that whole community collaboration, community partnerships. Just as the college is a training partner, we have other, you know, partners that are inside of the prison system, teaching them some of those work readiness skills, the life skills. They may even have like preliminary shop type classes where they can learn how to do different framing and hand tool, you know, operation, things like that. Once they come to us, they still need the work readiness training. They still need the life skills and the coaching. At that point, we start introducing financial literacy. We help them with housing assistance. So if they have any type of homeless situation, we will help them with that until they get on a job and on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
We help them with transportation assistance so that they can get to and from class with no obstacles. Daily lunches, making sure that they eat every day. Sometimes it's the only meal that they eat, depending on who it is. Mm-hmm. We have people who, again, are homeless. We have people who are couch surfing. You can call that homeless, too. We have people who are established and maybe have worked in construction before but just want to get certifications and new opportunities. So it ranges, but the services are offered to everyone who needs it, mental health as well.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And so how does someone learn more about this program? Is this an application process? How do people get selected for the program to enter into this?
So you can come by the office at 4315 South Lancaster Road in Dallas, Texas. That's our Dallas address. The Fort Worth office location, it is by appointment only for right now because we had some staff change, okay?
Okay.
But the address there is 5001 Brentwood Stair Road. Suite 130. And that's the physical location. The email address is our workforce director. Her name is Pam Davis, pdavis@blackcontractors.org. And of course, our website, www.blackcontractors.org. And from there, you can apply. You can email Pam and our case managers. All of the contact information is on the website.
Okay, great. Is there any specific criteria or any thing that people should be aware of before looking at the application process?
We don't turn away anyone. So there are definitely different employers who will accept different offenses and different background charges. But we like to pride ourselves on helping everyone who comes to the door. So depending on what your offense is or what the charge is, we will place you with those employers who accept those offenses. So it just depends case by case.
Great. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, thank you for that information.
You're welcome.
Collaboration is key in the area of workforce development. You always hear me say that, you know, no person, no entity is an island in this work, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about collaboration. Mm-hmm. So can you give us some examples of community partnerships that currently exist and the impact those relationships are having on our economy as it relates to your association?
The biggest ones that we've seen are going to be, again, with the colleges. That's a huge community collaboration partner. We have a lot of things going on with Texas Workforce Solutions, is another big person or entity that helps with the recruitment and even helping find, you know, employment for the individuals that come through the program. We have Tarrant County is a partner. Dallas County is a partner. Different school districts, Fort Worth ISD, DISD. And I say these names because where the construction follows, the workforce opportunities follow.
Absolutely.
And so all of these public entities are doing construction projects. And so with that, we're able to, you know, again, put the expectation on our members to participate in the program. And so one goes with the other.
Right. Yeah. So speak a little bit more about the relationships with the ISDs. What are you doing in that space? Because obviously we're talking like the reentry program, that is to help people who've been incarcerated who are coming out on the other side. What are you doing in the ISD to help younger people to help avoid those pitfalls of going into incarceration and helping them from coming out of high school or completing high school for that matter?
Yeah. Well, what we do on both ISDs is participate with the junior and senior level. In Dallas, there's what's called a PTEC. They have like construction focused magnet schools.
Right, a pathway that goes towards the construction industry.
Correct, correct. And so, same with Fort Worth ISD, going into different schools and talking to them about the construction career, what they can, you know, potentially make in terms of salary. That's always a big because people think that construction is just sweeping or picking up or, you know,
pounding a hammer.
And there's so many other facets to construction. And so just educating the students on what their different options are, how much they can make, you know, but then also setting realistic expectations. Like you have to start from the bottom and work your way up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you help define career pathways in the construction industry as well?
Correct.
That's key.
Yep. Yep, they have to know what's available to them, you know. And another thing that we've been focusing on is actually young ladies and getting women more engaged into the construction industry. And some women and young ladies in the classes, they have like fathers or, you know, relatives that are in the construction business. So they want to be out there doing that. They already know what they want to do. Then there's some ladies that we've seen there say, no way, we want to be in management. And we're like, okay, we want to just tell them everybody what to do. That's what they say. We want to tell everybody what to do. So
there you go. Are you getting a lot of interest from young women?
Yeah. Definitely not as much as I think, you know, could if everybody, you know, if more people were exposed to it. But yeah, so, surprisingly.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So, well, Kim, I know we already talked a little bit about this in the conversation about the reentry program, but I'm curious to know from your perspective of, you know, being the president and CEO and all the community work that you do, what is it that's, in your opinion, most affecting the African American workforce, and how does the RBCA advocate for those changes beyond the things we've already discussed?
The African-American workforce, to just keep it more surface, because there's so many things. And you'll have to know also that a lot of things personally were revealed to me as I began working in this space, right? Because again, I didn't just start in this industry.
Right.
And just knowing my background as a military brat, traveling the world, very diverse. I come from a biracial family. My mother's Caucasian, my father's Black. Having relatives on both sides, and some of my Caucasian family did not accept us. But still, all of that to say, my lens for seeing what were some issues within the African-American culture, or the African-American, the Black community, my awareness didn't really come about until I started really working in this industry. Mm-hmm. And I saw how, it just wasn't something that I had in my radar,
right.
You know?
You don't know what you don't
exactly.
know until you start. It's like peeling back the onion, right, once you get into...
Yeah, and so once I started, you know, I lived in Allen, I worked at NTTA, I was like in my own little bubble, and I didn't even go south of 30 or, you know, south of, Fort Worth unless I had to be there for a meeting or, you know, I really didn't go there mm-hmm. until I started getting into this work. And then I started to realize, oh, it is different. It's a lot different. And it started to sadden me because there are so many disparities and there's not a lot of equity. You know, there could be so much more equity in terms of just things that are provided in the communities, you know, healthcare, grocery stores, even where we're at, like in Fort Worth and in Dallas, we purposely have our offices in underserved, hardest hit zip codes mm-hmm. so that people can get to us. But being there, I realized, oh, they don't have like a Kroger, you know, right. or they don't have, a healthy food store.
A lot of food deserts.
Exactly. And so there's those little things. And then there's also, like I said, the healthcare issue. There's also the lack of job and employment opportunities that are actually going to be affordable wages, living wages. And so I think that a lot of the things, again, you said it earlier, education, you know, we have to really invest into our school systems. The kids in these areas, you know, they do have leaking roofs. Mm-hmm. They do have equipment and a desk that have been used over and over and over and over again until, you know, it's like defective. And that's not fair, you know, because they don't get the same type of, they don't get to dream like the other kids get to dream that have all of those things. Mm-hmm. And so I think it just starts, and I don't want to get into, you know, too deep, but I just want to say that a lot of the issues, I mean, we could be here all day because they go so deep. You know, they go so deep to where people almost feel hopeless that they can't change their circumstances. Right. And so the necessity of these community programs are to really be like boots on the ground inside of the community so people can actually help fix things one step at a time. Mental health is a big issue, and that's something that needs to be addressed. But with no money or affordable health care to get those services, you know, you go unaddressed and it gets worse, and then it might turn into addiction.
Right.
And from there, addiction turns into, you know, you losing your family, and now you have a broken unit. Now your kids are broken, and right. now they have, you know, it's just like cyclical.
Right.
And so, again, just addressing some of those things like jobs, you know, addiction support, recovery. And knowing that you have people around you in the area that will actually help you, and that's what they're there to do. I think from that, we can just start addressing those things one person at a time.
Right, exactly. One person, one community at a time. And I think it's important, too, from my perspective of being in higher education, it's not just about educating the kids. It's also important to educate the parents, because mm-hmm. especially from underserved communities, the parents don't know what they don't know mm-hmm. because they themselves have never been exposed. And it starts because the kids are then influenced by their parents. And so education, teaching them about career pathways, job mm-hmm. opportunities, mm-hmm. and encouraging employers in the region to also get involved, to go out and knock on the doors of those high schools and those, you know, education institutions in the underserved communities to say, hey, look, these kind of jobs are available. These are the career pathways, and mm-hmm. to really get out there and start yeah. that communication. So
yeah, I love that.
So Kim, I'm curious to know, how did the pandemic impact your work and how are you finding the recovery process?
The pandemic, wow, which is still going through, right?
Right. We're not quite out of the woods.
And now Omicron is on the rise. So luckily, construction remained essential through the pandemic, which was a lifeline for a lot of people, a lot of families to just keep food on their table, I think. But at the same token, a lot of people weren't, you know, as fortunate to be in essential businesses. I can see that through the pandemic, though, and I can speak again for the construction industry in terms of business, you have so many federal dollars being pushed down to improve infrastructure and to improve like your capital programs, your capital improvement programs. And so because the government is trying to stimulate the economy and keep it going, I believe truly that construction is a means that they're doing that. And so on that front, you see so much boom. You know, you see multi-million dollars, billions, trillions now,
yeah, for sure.
that are being pushed into the construction industry. So in that regard, you know, things are good. But then on the ugly side of it is that you did have a lot of people, again, who were out of work. You had, even on the construction side, when we were looking for people to come to our program, they weren't coming. Some of it was fear of getting out, being around people, going to the program. Some of it was the unemployment checks they were getting, right, because they didn't want to come out and work. But, you know, on that side, so we're juggling with it constantly. Internally, in the office, for the support, the team, the staff that runs the RBCA, we're definitely a hybrid model now. I love being able to virtually, you know, and efficiently, quickly talk to people, right, without having to go places. But I do definitely value, and I'm very grateful for the one-on-one like we're doing today. So
yes, it's nice to be back together. But I agree with you, the virtual setting and having that flexibility, certainly mm-hmm. nice. I'm curious to know, as it relates to the pandemic, how did supply chain, because for example, this past year I built a home.
Okay.
And obviously there were multiples of delays because supply chain, you know, no bricks, no wood, no, you know, a lot of things. How has that mm-hmm. impacted some of the work that you've done pertaining to the work that you're doing?
Supply chain. I'm also a realtor. Okay, so
yes, I know that.
I didn't mention that, but that's the other thing that I love doing so much: house building, home building, building vertically, infrastructure, all of that. It was crazy, and it definitely drove up cost everywhere.
Indeed it did.
Yeah. I'm sure you experienced that. So it drove up costs, delayed deadlines, just taught people to be, and is teaching people to be a lot more patient and flexible, and coming up with, also it's teaching people how to think outside of the box too, because now we're trying to find, okay, we never want to go through that again. So what can we do to get things closer in America, you right. know, where we're not having to ship international, things like that. So in terms of trucking, I know the trucking industry, there's a shortage on laborers and drivers. And so that has helped the Second Chance program, because we've been able to partner with CDL training companies and get them, you know, to train people so that they can be CDL drivers and, you know, address that demand on the truck driving side. So that's been a positive. And when you ask about the pandemic and just kind of the delays, there's so many bad things, but then there's so many opportunities that have come out of it and so many different ideas. And so I'm really hoping that this has, you know, challenged a lot of people. And it does. You can tell, I guess, the people in life who always see the good and who continue to keep moving despite what's thrown at them,
right.
those are the winners.
Overcoming the barriers.
Yeah.
It sparked a whole new way of, innovation in the workforce for certain, and education.
It did.
So
absolutely.
So, Kim, how does, I guess I'm, as a leader, both of us being leaders in the DFW Metroplex, how do we help to build a more equitable economy for our businesses, our workforce, and our communities, from your perspective?
You have to have intentionality. The first thing is just knowing what you want to do, knowing what you want to offer or provide or what your end goal is for your business. If you want to be an institution or a corporation or an entity promotes equity, diversity, inclusion, giving opportunities, you have to just be intentional about it. You have to make sure that every decision, because sometimes we get so caught up in the bureaucracy is the word I'm looking for. So we get so caught up in the bureaucracy that we forget just the simple intention and letting that intention drive your decisions. And so I think that would be one thing. And then, just authenticity in terms of your leadership style and how you interact with people, just being genuine, authentic, your authentic self. And when you're authentic, you can also be sympathetic with people. You can understand, you can relate. Just taking a second to like be present and understand what's going on. And that's from bottom up. And I think once you do that, you naturally create a culture for, reciprocity and transparency. Your goals are able to be achieved together because you're all on the same page. And so I would just start with those two things. That should go a long way.
Absolutely. And being mindful of all of that. That's great. That's a great summary.
Thanks.
So, Kim, I know you mentioned the website, you mentioned your office locations. If you could, just one more time, so if there's a listening audience out there, if they want to donate, they want to become a member of the RBCA, or they simply just want to become involved in some capacity, mentorship, whatever it might be, if you could give us your website and your phone number again one more time, just so we can get that out there.
Happy to. It's www.blackcontractors.org. And the phone number there at the headquarter office is 214-565-8946.
Great. And so, Kim, to close, what advice can you offer to any young person who is just starting out in the workforce?
Wow. Well, like similar to my situation, I had no idea I would be here, but I definitely thought I had it all mapped out. And so if you're a person who has it all mapped out, just be prepared to go a different direction and be flexible to move in a different direction if that's what the universe is telling you to do.
Adaptable to change.
Yeah, be so adaptable. And if you're someone who absolutely has no clue what they're going to do, like my 16-year-old son right now, my advice would be to just start somewhere. Again, knowing that your plan is probably going to change, over the years, you're going to elevate and grow. And so your plan changes as you grow. A young person, you sometimes don't even know, you can't fathom it until you get to that point. So it's hard to say, but I would just, again, say be flexible and start somewhere.
There you go. And keep persevering.
That's right.
For sure.
That's right.
Well, Kim, I am certainly glad that you are here. And I want to thank you so much for your time today and being on the podcast. We really appreciate it. And so thank you so much. And to the listening audience, we look forward to seeing you on the next edition of the Workforce Lens. Thank you.